Chapter 37. It was Saturday night in Kitchenerville, an ill in the men's bar of the Lord Kitchener Hotel. The daily paid men from the five gold mines were bellying up to the counter three deep. The public dance had been in progress for 3 hours. At tables along the veranda, the womenfolk sat primly sipping their port and lemonade. Although they were all admirably ignoring the absence of the men, yet a constant and merciless vigil was kept on the door to the men's bar. Most of the wives already had the automobile keys safely in their handbags. In the dining hall, cleared of its furniture and sprinkled liberally with French chalk, the local four-piece band, who played under the unlikely name of the Wind Dogs, launched without preliminaries into a lively rendition of Die Ukral Litchi. And from the men's bar, in various stages of inebriation, answering the call to arms, came the troops. Many of them had shed their jackets, the knots of their ties had slipped, their voices were boisterous, and legs were a little unsteady as they led their women onto the dance floor and immediately showed to which school of the dance they belonged. There was the cavalry squadron, which tucked partner under one arm, very much like a lance, and charged. At the other end of the scale were those who plodded grimly around the perimeter, looking neither left nor right, speaking to no one, not even their partners. Then there were the sociables, who reeled about the floor, red in the face, their movements completely unrelated to the music, shouting to their friends and attempting to pinch any feminine posterior that came within range. Their unpredictable progress interfered with the evolutions of the dedicated. The dedicated took up their positions in the centre of the floor and twisted. A half dozen years previously, the twist had swept, like an Asian flu epidemic, through the world and then faded out. Gone. Forgotten. Except in places like Kitchenerville. Here it had been taken and firmly entrenched into the social culture of the community. Even in this stronghold of the twist, there was one master. Johnny DeLange, gut man, but he can twist, hey? They murmured with awe. With the sinuous, erotic movements of an erect cobra, Johnny was twisting with Hetty. His shiny rayon suit caught the light, and the lace ruffles of his shirt fluttered at his throat. There was a fierce grin of pleasure on his hawk features, and the jeweled buckles of his pointed Italian shoes twinkled as he danced. A big girl with copper hair and creamy skin, Hetty was light on her feet. She had a tiny waist and a swelling, regal bottom under the emerald green skirt. She laughed as she danced, a full, healthy laugh to match her body. The two of them moved with the expertise of a couple who had danced together often. Hetty anticipated each of Johnny's movements, and he grinned his approval at her. From the veranda, David DeLange watched them. He stood in the shadows, clutching a tankard of beer, a squat, lonely figure. When another dancing couple cut off his view of Hetty's luscious revolving buttocks, he would exclaim with irritation and move restlessly. The music ended, and the dancers spilled out onto the veranda, laughing and breathless, mopping, streaming faces. Girls, squealing and giggling as the men led them to their seats, deposited them and then headed for the bar. "See you." Johnny left Hetty reluctantly. He would have liked to stay with her, but he was sensitive about what the boys would say if he spent the whole evening with his wife. He was absorbed into the masculine crowd, to join their banter and loud laughter. He was deeply involved in a discussion of the merits of the new Ford Mustang, which he was considering buying, when Davy nudged him. "It's Constantine," he whispered. and Johnny looked up quickly. Konstantin was a Greek immigrant, a stupor on the Blauberg mine. He was a big, strong, black-haired individual with a broken nose. Johnny had broken his nose for him about 10 months previously. As a bachelor, Johnny would fight him on the average of once a month. Nothing serious, just a semi-friendly punch-up. However, Konstantin could not understand that nowadays Johnny was forbidden by his brand new wife from indulging in casual exchanges of fisticuffs. He had developed the erroneous theory that Johnny DeLange was afraid of him. He was coming down the barroom now, holding his glass in his massive, hairy right hand, with the little finger extended genteelly. On his hip rested his other hand, and he minced along with a simpering smile on his blue-jowled, granite-textured features. Stopping in front of the mirror to pat his hair into place, he winked at his cronies and then came on down to where Johnny stood. He paused and ogled Johnny heavily, fluttering his eyelids and wriggling his hips. His colleagues from the Blauberg mine were weak with laughter, gurgling merrily, hanging on to each other's shoulders. Then, with a bump and grind that raised another howl of laughter, Konstantin disappeared into the lavatories, to emerge minutes later and blow Johnny a kiss as he went back to join his friends. They plied liquor on the Greek in appreciation of his act. Johnny's smile was a little strained as he resumed the discussion on the Mustang's virtues. 20 minutes and a half a dozen brandies later, Konstantin repeated his little act again on the way to the latrine. His repertoire was limited. "Hold it, Johnny," whispered Davy. "Let's go and sit on the veranda." "He's asking for it, I'm telling you." Johnny's smile had disappeared. "Come on, Johnny, man." "No, hell, they'll think I'm running. I can't go now." "You know what Hetty will say," Davy warned him. For a moment longer, Johnny hesitated. "The hell with what Hetty says." Johnny bunched his right fist with its array of gold rings as he moved down to Konstantin and leaned beside him on the counter. "Herbie," he called the barman, and when he had his attention, he indicated the Greek. "Please give the lady a port and lemonade." And the bystanders scattered for cover. Davy shot out of the door onto the veranda to report to Hetty. "Johnny," he gasped, "he's fighting again." "Is he?" Hetty came to her feet like a red-headed Valkyrie. But her progress to the men's bar was delayed by the crowd of spectators that jammed the doorway and all the windows. The crowd was tiptoeing and climbing onto the chairs and tables for a better view. Every thud or crash of breaking furniture was greeted with a roar of delight. Hetty had her handbag clutched in her right hand, and like a jungle explorer hacking his way through the undergrowth with a machete, she opened a path for herself to the barroom door. At the door, she paused. The conflict had reached a critical stage. Among a litter of broken glass and shattered stools, Johnny and the Greek were circling each other warily, weaving and feinting, all their wits concentrated upon each other. Both of them were marked. The Greek was bleeding from his lip, a thin red ribbon of blood down his chin that dripped under his shirt. Johnny had a shiny red swelling closing one eye. The crowd was silent, waiting. "Johnny DeLange!" Hetty's voice cracked like a Mauser rifle fired from ambush. Johnny started guiltily, dropping his hands, half turning towards her, as the Greek's fist crashed into the side of his head. Johnny spun from the blow, hit the wall and slid down quietly. With a roar of triumph, Constantine rushed forward to put the boots into Johnny's prostrate form. But he pitched forward to sprawl unconscious beside Johnny. Hetty had hit him with the water bottle, snatched up from one of the table tops. "Please help me get my husband to the car," she appealed to the men around her, suddenly helpless and little girlish. She sat beside Davy in the front of the Monaco, fuming with anger. Johnny lay at ease upon the back seat. He was snoring softly. "Don't be angry, Hetty," Davy was driving sedately. "I've told him not once, 100 times. Hetty's voice crackled like static. "I told him I wouldn't put up with it." "It wasn't his fault. The Greek started it," Davy explained softly, and placed his hand on her leg. "You stick up for him just because he is your brother," she said. "That's not true," Davy soothed her, stroking her leg. "You know how I feel about you, Hetty." "I don't believe you." His hand was moving higher. "You men are all the same. You all stick together." Her anger was fast solidifying into a burning resentment of Johnny Delange, one in which she was willing to take a calculated revenge. She knew that Davy's hand was no longer trying to comfort her and quench her anger. Before she married Johnny Delange, Hetty had had every opportunity to learn about men, and she had been an enthusiastic and receptive pupil. She placed no special importance on an act of the flesh, dispensing her favours as casually as someone might offer a cigarette case around. "Why not?" she thought. "That will fix Mr. Johnny Delange. Not all the way, of course, but just enough to get my own back on him." "No, Hetty, it's true, I tell you." Davy's voice was husky, as he felt her knees fall apart under his hand. He touched the silky smooth skin above her stocking top. The Monaco slowed to almost walking pace, and it was 10 minutes more before they reached the company-owned house on the outskirts of Kitchenerville. In the back seat, Johnny groaned. Immediately, Davy's hand jerked back to the steering wheel, and Hetty sat up in her seat, straightening her skirt. "Help me get him inside," she said, and her voice was shaky and her cheeks flushed. She was no longer angry.